A Bash in a Box is your go-to destination in the online party goods industry. We specialize in simplifying your party planning experience, offering personalized services for baby showers, birthday parties, anniversary celebrations, gender reveals, holidays, and more. Whether it's a birthday celebration or a holiday extravaganza, we've got you covered. At A Bash in a Box, we understand that hosting a party should be joyful, not overwhelming. That's why we've curated a seamless online platform. Just choose your event type, select a theme from our custom designed collection, pick what box fits your budget, and personalize your party with a few clicks at checkout. Our team of experts will work their magic, and your perfect party decor will be delivered right to your doorstep. Whether it's an intimate gathering or the bash of the year, A Bash in a Box caters to all your party needs. Choose from a variety of custom birthday themes or reach out to us for a personalized design crafted just for you at abashinabox.com.
Well, welcome to this week's edition of Debriefing the Law. I am Joel Oster, and yes, I am without my faithful co-host, Christopher Marone, who apparently ditched us for Disney this week. So, yeah, we got the better end of that deal. I used to live in Orlando. Disney is not a place for the faint of heart. No, you got to have a strategy. You got to have a plan. It is not a vacation in the slightest, but that's where Chris is this week. He is just chumming it up with Mickey and Minnie, and so kudos to Chris. But this was such an exciting week in the world of law. I couldn't just pass on doing a podcast this week, so I'm going to go solo. But before we get into all the news of this week, a couple of words to our sponsors. So, Comedian of Law, we do CLEs that educate and entertain. We are going to take our first destination CLE cruise here in September. I think there are a few spots left on this ship. And so, you will not want to miss the CLE. If you are looking for a last-minute vacation, check this one out. We're going to go to Athens, and we are going to do a class. We're going to study the Socrates trial, where the trial actually took place. And this is a fascinating trial. It happened in 400 BC. That's a long time ago. But yeah, I think the issues that plague the Socrates trial are the same issues that plague our current legal system today. If you want to know how or why, there's still room on that cruise, so check us out. Also, if you need CLEs, check out our website, comedianoflaw.com. We have CLEs that educate and also will not put you to sleep. No need to bring a pillow to our CLEs. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to Christine Caso. She's a photographer, a local photographer here in Kansas City. I went to her studio this week to get some marketing pics. And I know it's a tough job for her to try to make me look good. I think she succeeded. And so we're going to show you those pics here in the upcoming weeks after they get photoshopped and edited. If there's any resemblance to Tom Cruise, you get what you pay for. And that's what I paid for. All right. Well, also this week, I'm going to talk to you about my trip this past week to Holcomb, Kansas, the site of the In Cold Blood murders. And so we are doing a CLE on, there you go, the book, In Cold Blood, Gruesome Murder. Truman Capote covered this and wrote the first true crimes book. So this whole true crimes genre started with this murder. So I went down to Holcomb, Kansas, went through the files, and I'm going to talk about that trip here a little bit later today. Also today, we're going to talk about the Trump trial. This is now week 3, I believe it is. And whenever you have a president on trial for hush money payments to a porn star, that's must cover content for a podcast, a legal podcast. I can't ignore that occurrence this past week. All right, but first, we'd like to cover a crazy lawsuit. And I found a crazy legal situation down in Miami, Florida, where lawyer Stephen Gutierrez, he was the lawyer and he was in court, and his client was facing a second degree arson arrest, a crime. He was charged with second degree arson, which you can kind of get the idea. Second degree arson, a fire happened, and somehow this person set the fire, right? Well, the lawyer's defense was sometimes fires just spontaneously happen. just out of the blue, boom, fires happen. If you've ever watched me grilling, you can see, yeah, sometimes fires do just spontaneously happen. True story, a couple of weeks ago, I had a stranger. I say a stranger. He was golfing in our backyard. It is a par three on a golf course. And so he was knocking on our doors. And he told my wife, your deck is on fire. True story. I was grilling some steaks. If I had not cleaned out the grease drippings from previous grilling episodes, and it kind of caught on fire. Of course, I was already in the back taking care of it because I knew my deck was on fire. Yeah, sometimes fires do just spontaneously happen, though in that situation it's because I had not cleaned out the grease trap while I was cooking some ribeyes. So that was this guy's defense. So during closing arguments, this lawyer was fidgeting with something in his pants. Yeah, don't let your imagination go there. We haven't gone to the Trump trial just yet. He was fidgeting with something in his pants, and boom, his pants caught on fire. What a coincidence. You're arguing a second-degree arson case. The issue is fire in your defenses. Fire spontaneously happened, and voila, during closing arguments, your pants catch on fire. Yeah, no one is buying it. He said it was just a coincidence. Yeah, judges and juries don't buy coincidences. And so he actually, his client lost that case, was found guilty of a second degree arson. But come on, you got to love the irony there, right? Liar, liar, pants on fire. And here during closing argument, the lawyer's pants actually caught on fire. All right, well, this past week, Stormy Daniel took the stand in the Trump case. Now, this is absolutely an insane development, right? But what a great metaphor for what a joke that this trial is, that Stormy Daniels, porn star galore, took the stand. Now, in 1925, Clarence Darrow called William Jennings Bryan, who was a three-time Democratic nominee, to the stand in the Scopes Monkey trial. The New York Times called this event of Clarence Darrow, the Johnny Cochran of his day, calling three-time Democratic presidential nominee William Jennings Bryan to the stand for cross-examination as the most greatest legal moment in Anglo-Saxon legal history. I think this week might have topped that. That's how huge this was. You have a porn star, by the way. Is there any, what standards does the porn industry have to call their actors and actresses stars? Have you ever heard of a porn B-list actor? They are all porn stars. So I'm just suggesting maybe they don't have the highest of standards in the porn industry. All right. But you have a porn star on the stand testifying about details about her alleged affair with not only a former president, but with the leading person to be the next president of the United States. Yeah, this is a surreal moment. But by the way, I do wonder what other previous world leaders would have thought about this situation where you have a president of the United States had an alleged affair, and now you are having someone on the stand testify about alleged hush money payments that went, well, actually, that's not alleged, that part actually is a given fact here. Hush money payments that were paid to this porn star, yeah, Henry VIII, if he saw this, Henry VIII going, what? You're on trial for that? My wife brought me breakfast that was cold, and I lobbed her head off, and no one, I didn't have any trials over that. Yeah, previous world leaders probably are laughing about this whole situation, but that's the day and age in which we live. All right, can you imagine if the DOJ called Marilyn Monroe to the stand to testify about an alleged affair with JFK, how big that moment would have been? That's kind of the scene that we have here. All right. First of all, I have so many different takes on her testimony. Let's start off with, why was she even called as a witness? Okay, so this whole case is about hush money payments that were paid to her, right? That, and how those records were kept. Why do we need to know the details about the affair? What relevance does that have to the legal issues? She shouldn't have even been called to the stand. The prejudicial effect of her testimony far outweighed any benefit that we get with relevance from her testimony. In fact, I suggest her testimony had zero relevance to the issues at hand. But why was she allowed to testify? Well, why do you think? She's a porn star talking about details about Donald Trump's sex life. That is going to be great for whatever your purpose you want. I mean, there's another purpose to this trial other than the actual merits, I'm going to suggest. And that's why she was allowed to testify. And then when she went into the details, the court acted all, "Oh, I can't believe you did that. Well, I had no idea that this testimony would go off rails." Really? You had no idea that this testimony would go off rails? That was the point of calling her, was that the testimony would go off rails. And so, Judge, I'm not buying that. You know exactly that. In fact, that's why you allowed Stormy Daniels to take the stand as a witness. All right, but I do think that her testimony was a disastrous day for the prosecution. And here's why I'm going to say that. I think, yes, it does make for great theater now. It was very salacious. It made all the headlines. But might the prosecution here be going too far? The jurors in the O.J. Simpson case, you know, who voted against the prosecution, ruled that O.J. was not guilty of murder against, Ron Brown and Nicole Simpson. One of the reasons they gave was that the prosecution went too far off track and they got sidetracked with a lot of irrelevant issues, according to the jury. I'm not saying they're irrelevant issues, but I'm saying the jury said, no, the prosecution just spent so much time on non-relevant issues that we thought if you were belaboring those issues, then maybe you don't really have much of a case. Might the same thing happen here? Might the jury say, no, this is crazy. No, come on, prosecution. Really? Do you think we needed to know the details about Donald Trump's sex life with Stormy Daniels? Yeah, that probably was not needed. The jury might actually take this and run and use this against the prosecution. But more to the point, the reason why this case even is on trial is because it is a political prosecution. We all know that. I'm gonna prove that here in just a bit. But if your real jury are the voters of America, might they say, look, you went too far? Come on, prosecution. Yeah, we know you got a stacked jury there in Manhattan and New York. But the people in Michigan, the people in Wisconsin, Arizona, you know, the swing states, they're rolling your eyes at what you are doing. And might they have gone too far in the true vote that counts, which is the vote for the next president of the United States. All right. So also in the Trump trial, the judge threatened jail time to Donald Trump if he violates the contempt order again. I think this is very huge. This is monumental because this shows exactly how wrong this trial is. I'm going to read to you now what actually Trump said that this judge threatened jail time with. Think about that. Jail time for saying what I'm about to read to you. All right, this is what Trump said. He said, you know, the judge is rushing the trial like crazy. Nobody's ever seen a thing go like this. That jury was picked so fast, 95% Democrats. The area is mostly all Democrat. You think of it as just a purely Democrat area. It's a very unfair situation, that I can tell you. There is nothing wrong with that statement. That is a perfectly fine statement. Are you telling me, Judge, that Donald Trump does not have a First Amendment right to say that? Did he identify any jurors? No. He's just simply talking about the process and pointing out that the jury is 95% Democrat is highly, highly relevant to this case. And the thought that you're going to threaten to throw someone in jail for engaging in free speech like that? Judge, no, I'm calling you out on that. That is not a proper use of the law. And this actually is on appeal now to the New York Appellate Courts, and we'll see how the court rules. But let me start with the obvious as to why this is totally a fine statement. First of all, this is a political prosecution. I find it humorous when people try to even insinuate it's not political. No, give me a break here. Of course it's political, and if you are trying to make the point it's not political, you're just stupid and there is no help for you. Let's start with the obvious. If Donald Trump had a D by his name rather than an R, I'm not talking about his first and initial, I'm talking about the fact that he is a Republican. If he were a Democrat, there would not be a trial here. You know that D.A. Bragg would not be bringing this case. If you suggest otherwise, shows you are a pundit, you are a political hack, and you're not looking at this even remotely through an unbiased lens. Of course, this is a political prosecution. Experts from all sides of the spectrum say that this case shouldn't even be brought. It's such a weak case. No one would bring such a weak case unless they were political enemies. Of course, this was a political prosecution. All right, then you have the fact that you have a political prosecution that was brought in a jurisdiction that is 85% Democrat. Yeah, so Donald Trump's statement, hugely relevant to that issue. And so I think he absolutely had a First Amendment right to say that. Did he identify any jurors with that statement? No, he did not. And there is no solution. I mean, what they're going to intimidate jurors? So a juror is going to be knocked off to be replaced by another Democrat? No, there is no chance that statement is going to impact any jurors. He did not identify them. He just simply said the composition of this jury is 95% Democrat. That's part of the story. This is a political prosecution. The timing of it, the lack of legal merit to this case, yeah, it all reeks of a political prosecution. So Trump's statement's absolutely protected and must be said. All right. So overall, I think that this past week was a disaster for the prosecution. And they called it, here's why I'm going to say that. They called it several witnesses this week, the prosecution did. And these witnesses established a couple of things. They established, number one, that Michael Cohen was at the center of these deals. So the hush money payments that were made, Michael Cohen was the hub of those deals. Okay, I think that's going to prove to be disastrous for the prosecution. Secondly, they proved this week that Donald Trump paid personally for these hush money payments. Again, I think that also at the end of the day is going to prove disastrous for the prosecution. All right, so let me remind you of three basics here as to why I think those occurrences, that testimony was a horrible result for the prosecution. First of all, this case at its core is about two things. The first thing is that these hush money payments were recorded improperly. Donald Trump apparently wanted these recorded as a retainer, as legal fees, and they were not legal fees. All right, let me ask you this. If you retain a lawyer, if you retain me, to represent you in any matter, to do a in paying hush money payments, that's standard lawyer fare. Those are called NDAs. That's not as sexy as hush money payments. So I get how hush money payments makes the headlines and not NDAs, but hush money payments are non-disclosure agreements. Standard fare for lawyers, they happen all the time. Here's what also happens to a lawyer. When a lawyer is engaging in transactions with the other side, oftentimes the money will be paid out from the retainer paid to the lawyer. Okay, so the lawyer actually will pay the funds. Now, that money actually does still belong to the client. It's just lawyers, because we don't trust our clients to actually pay the bills, we have a retainer so then we can pay expenses from that account. Okay, it goes on all of the time. So here, Michael Cohen, who was a lawyer, was hired by Donald Trump to effectuate these hush money payments if the retainer was not done properly. Let's just say that in this situation, it was not done properly. Okay, if the retainer of contracts agreements was not done properly, whose fault do you think that belongs to? Whose fault is that? Would it be the client, the non-lawyer client, or would it be the legally trained lawyer? Yes, the legally trained lawyer would be the one responsible for messing up how those that retainer agreement was effectuated, not the client. So here, this testimony this week proved Michael Cohen was at the hub of this. He was Donald Trump's lawyer, and he filed those as legal fees. If he didn't do the retainer agreement the right way, that's on Michael Cohen. That's not on Donald Trump. All right, that's the first basic. The second basic is that hush money payments are perfectly legal. They're not illegal. I know it sounds salacious. It sounds, you know, it's a great headline. Ooh, hush money payments. It's perfectly legal under the law. There is no insinuation you cannot, hush money payments are illegal. All right, that's the second basic. The third basic, you know, principle regarding this case that I want you to understand is that it's okay for a candidate to spend his own money to influence the election. So there is a campaign finance law, been several of them throughout the years, and they regulate contributions. How much can this buddy, this person over here, contribute to my campaign? All right. Also, they'll have a situation where corporations, can they contribute to your campaign? These PACs, can they contribute? And how much can they contribute? Contributions, that is a term of art in this legal world. All right, but what also is standard, you can spend as much of your own money as you want. There is no limit on how much of your own money you can spend. So Donald Trump could have spent $1 billion to hush up Stormy Daniels because he wanted her to keep quiet because he wanted to win the election. That is not illegal. Now, I get that Donald Trump is arguing the opposite in this case. His lawyers are arguing this was not done to influence the election. Okay, factually, let's say that's true. He spent that money because he did not want Melania, his wife, to find out what Stormy Daniels was saying. All right, whatever. That may be why he spent that money. It doesn't matter. I am telling you, if he spent that money because he wanted to win the presidency, there's nothing wrong with that. So this week's testimony that he spent his own money, I think is going to prove at the end of the day to be absolutely disastrous for the prosecution. Let's just say this case does go up on appeal to the United States Supreme Court. That's going to be how they decide this case. So, well, wait a second here. Donald Trump spent his own money. That's not illegal. So therefore, that wasn't a second crime. And therefore, the New York Records Act falls flat on its face. As a reminder, in order for this is how tortured this legal case is. In order for the DA Braggs to be successful in this trial, he has to prove, number one, that Donald Trump kept the records incorrectly. Here's the critical part, to cover up another crime. And his theory here is, best we can tell, the other crime was conspiracy to influence an election. What? Conspiracy? No, Donald Trump was the candidate. He can spend his own money. So all this is true. It does make you wonder, well, why is there even this case? Donald Trump could have filed motions to squelch this case and appeal that to the U.S. Supreme Court. But I think he would have had a great argument to get this case dismissed out of the gate. Why didn't he do that? It almost makes me wonder that Donald Trump wanted to have this trial. The more that this trial plays out its free airtime, his message, his core message is getting out there that he's being unfairly prosecuted. He doesn't have to pay for any of this airtime. I am wondering if this case isn't intentionally being allowed to go forward by Donald Trump, because again, it's so weak. He could have dismissed this case and then appealed that lack of dismissal. He could have done that. He did not do that. I'm almost wondering if the answer as to why he is allowing this case to go forward is because he wants this case to go forward. Even a conviction at the end of the day is probably going to help his cause. He's going to appeal that. There's no way a New York appellate court will allow him to actually go to jail. So it will get appealed, but he will be allowed then to make the argument of unfair prosecution. And I'm almost wondering if that is not what is behind this case. All right. Well, what else is in the news this week? Let me see here. Trump's Georgia case is also in the news. So, and yes, if you're trying to keep score, don't worry, at the end of this podcast, I'll do a quick rundown of all of Trump's legal affairs. But Trump also, as you know, is facing trial in Georgia. So I haven't heard of the Georgia case in a while. What was that about? Remind me, Joel. That's the RICO case brought by Fannie Willis. This case got sidetracked when there was a hearing over whether or not Fannie Willis should be disqualified from being the prosecutor on this case. Now, what did Fannie Willis do? Well, she hired her lover. I have that in quotes, alleged lover. She said, oh, no, he wasn't my lover during that time. No one's buying that, Fannie. No. Your cell phone records showed you went over to his house at 11:30 p.m. and didn't leave till the next morning after breakfast. Yeah, that's not when you go over to your co-counsel's office to work on the file. Unless file is a pseudonym for something else. No. You saw each other multiple times. Fannie, no one's buying. You were not having an affair with your prosecutor who was making bank off of this case. And so, if you remember, there was a motion that was filed to disqualify the prosecutor and Fannie Willis from this case. And the trial judge kicked out the prosecutor. Well, actually, he told Fannie Willis, you have a choice. Either you allow the prosecutor to stay on and you leave, or you stay and the prosecutor gets the boot. Okay, so she booted the prosecutor so she could stay on the case. Well, Trump appealed that decision to allow Fannie Willis to stay on the case to the Georgia Appellate Court. And this week, the Georgia Appellate Court agreed to take up that appeal. What does that mean? This case is stopped cold in its track. There will be a round of briefing in this case. There will be oral argument, most likely. There will be some deliberation and then a decision. This will, at all practical purposes, delay this trial until past the election, at which point no one is going to actually care about this case. Come on, this is a political case. We all know post-election, if Donald Trump wins, this case probably will be taking off the docket totally, because then the Supreme Court will step in and say, no, we can't allow for an ongoing criminal complaint against our current president of the United States. Under federalism rules, we can't allow for that. And so if Donald Trump does win the presidency, I do not believe the Supreme Court will allow for this case to continue while he is president. It will be stayed for 4 years. All right, if he loses, well, then who really cares, right? I mean, come on. If he's not going to be the president of the United States, the Democrats don't care, and this case will also go by the wayside pretty quickly. So this is a huge win for Donald Trump. All right, what else is in the news? Let me see what we have here. Trump's classified documents case was in. Yeah, this was a huge week for Trump's legal affairs. So he, if you know, in Florida, he's facing a classified documents case. He miskept classified documents. He showed them to some of his buddies to kind of brag, oh, look at this classified document. I probably shouldn't be showing you this classified document, but here is how important I used to be. You get the idea. I actually read the transcript. That's kind of what he actually said with classified documents. This is a very scary case for Donald Trump because of all of the prosecutions, of all of the charges against Trump, this one actually has merit. I do believe in my heart of hearts, Donald Trump violated the law here. What do I mean by that? There is a law on classified documents, and you're not supposed to show it to other people, right? Like Hillary Clinton was not allowed to keep classified documents on her personal email server. President Joe Biden was not allowed to keep classified documents on top of his Corvette in his garage. We know that there is a law speaks directly to this issue, and I believe Donald Trump violated that law. By the way, at the very beginning of this, when I heard about this case, I thought, well, no, he didn't violate this law. He was the president when he took these documents out of the office. He had a standing order to declassify all of the documents. That's kind of how I thought this case was going to go. And then I read the transcript where Donald Trump was recorded as telling a third party, hey, look at this document. It's war strategy. I probably shouldn't be showing this to you because it's classified. Okay, so there might be some evidence there that Donald Trump did show classified documents to third parties after he was president, because he's on recording as saying as much. You could be saying, oh, Jollibee probably was, he could have been lying to this third party, just kind of brag about how important he was. Yeah, I can see Donald Trump lying. He's kind of braggadocious. Oh, this is how important I used to be. But it's still Donald Trump on the record saying, these are classified documents. Look at them. And this, how, you know, this case, I think, was scary to Donald Trump for that reason. Now, it wasn't scary to Donald Trump for this reason. If he wins the election, he can pardon himself. This is entirely a federal crime. If he was president, or if a Republican became the president, they could pardon him from this trial and even stop the trial in his tracks by just pardoning himself from that. That being said, the judge in that case has stayed the trial, allowing the Supreme Court to rule on this matter as far as the issue of, is there immunity for Donald Trump on certain cases? A lot of different reasons. For whatever reason, the important thing for us is this judge stayed this case indefinitely. It is now off the table. All right, well, what is left? Let me go over my notes. Ah, Trump's January 6th case. You remember this case, the January 6th deal where there was a redneck convention there on the Capitol Square? I just really have a hard time when I hear people saying this is an insurrection. Really? It's an insurrection. I looked up those terms. I am a history major. I went digging through the history. I have yet to find any insurrection in the history of man and womankind where the greatest any nation was attempted to be overthrown by a bunch of buffoons with zero weapons. Yeah, this was not an insurrection. No, this was a redneck convention. Was it a scary redneck convention? Absolutely, it was a scary redneck convention. I understand why the people in the Capitol area and Capitol building were scared for their lives. They didn't know what was going on there. So it could have been an open shooter in that situation. I get that. It was a very, very scary situation. It was not an insurrection. Just stop it if you want to call that an insurrection. Again, that's proving you are a political hack, or you are just lazy and repeating what other people have said. No, just ask yourself, do you really think the United States of America, with its military, could be overrun by a bunch of redneck buffoons with spoons? And I say spoons metaphorically, as in they had no weapons. Of course, the answer is no, they could not do that. There's no way they would overthrow. That's not even a suggestion that you could entertain in the back of your mind. No, that was not an insurrection. It was dangerous, but it was not an insurrection. All right, but you know what I'm talking about, January 6th. And Trump, did he have any involvement in organizing that redneck convention? Well, that issue went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they are currently considering whether or not Trump should have immunity for his presidential acts. We covered that in previous podcasts. You already know what the law is. You know how the Supreme Court is going to rule. The Supreme Court is going to say, for Trump's private acts, he does not have absolute immunity. It's just for his acts as a president. But here's the catch. They're going to then send this case back to the trial court to make that determination as to what acts, what charges, are against Trump in his official capacity, arguably, and which ones are just against him acting privately. And then whatever that court decides, it's going to get appealed. And you will have another layer of appeals. What's the offshoot of that? There is no way the January 6th case will go to trial before the next election. So if you are trying to keep score here, I've gone over all these different cases. Here is the upshot. Of all of the trials against Trump, and I believe there are five of them, only one has a chance to go to trial before the election, and that's the one in New York going on right now, where you have a porn star on the stand, you have a convicted liar, perjurer, Michael Cohen, who's the prosecution star witness. This is great entertainment. And so let's pay attention and let's enjoy that ride. All right. I told you I took this trip this last week to Holcomb, Kansas. I'm going to talk about that a little bit because it was a lot of fun. So here's what I am doing. I am partnering with NBI, that's National Business Institute, and doing an exclusive True Crimes CLE series. And I got to tell you, I could not be more pumped. I cannot be more jazzed up. I mean, this is a fun stuff. And I hate to say Researching murder is fun, but I am a history major. I get to now dig into history and use that worthless history degree I received from my alma mater. Yes, I'm finally doing my parents proud by using my worthless history degree. So I'm not digging into the murders, but I'm digging into the history. So this last week, I drive out to Holcomb, Kansas. By the way, I took the route that the killers took in 1959. So you had these two killers that met at a restaurant in Olathe, Kansas. And they said, today's the day we're gonna rob this farmer. He has $10,000. We know that. We're gonna go rob him, and we are going to leave no witnesses. So they started their journey. In Olathe, Kansas, they went through Emporia. There's a Brahms restaurant there in Emporia. Whenever I stop off in Emporia, I get a Brahms ice cream. Their soft serve vanilla, best dessert money can buy. Brahms is not sponsoring this podcast. I'm going to give this promo free of charge. Stop off at Brahms and get their large soft serve vanilla ice cream in a waffle cone, and it will be the best dessert you've ever had in your life. It is pure, it is simple, it is delicious, and did I mention it is cheap? Yeah, $2.08 is all that huge, big old ice cream it cost me. I do it all the time. Now, I don't think Brahms existed in 1959, so our two murderers did not stop off there to get ice cream. I did, so I'm not saying too true to the storyline, but whatever. I follow the route to the city. New York City, you say? No. Kansas City? No. Garden City, which to the people in Holcomb was the city. Yeah, when they went into the city, they were talking about Garden City, and they hung out there for a little bit, got some gas, and then they made the trek to Holcomb, which is just a few miles past Garden City. So I did that same track. I went the other, put it on my GPS. I think it was like 4 or 5 miles or so past Garden City, and I entered into Holcomb, Kansas. Now, in my mind, I thought that where this farm was way out in the boonies. Now, it's going to have to be clear out there, having no idea where I am, just farmland as far as the eye can see. No, it actually wasn't like that. It was right there on the edge of Holcomb. There was actually a trailer park area where there are a lot of trailer homes. And I was there at the edge of it, and I could look past a small farming plot of land. I'm going to guess, you know, maybe 10 acres or so. So it wasn't this huge conglomerate corporate farms that we think of today. But anyway, it was a decent sized farm, especially in 1959. I imagine for a person who grew up without any money, like Herb Clutter did, he earned his money, then he bought his land. This was a very significant development for him. He had his own River Valley farm. And so I could see the house over there, and I went by the house. And I'm telling you, it just, the moment caught up to me. This is where these two individuals decided to act out their plan. And by the way, there actually was a moment, and I paused my car where they paused their car, where they saw the light flicker in the farm hands, the ranch hand's house. It was a separate house. They saw the light come on. What we now know is that the ranch hand was up all night because their baby was colicky, was not sleeping, so they're up and down all night long. Well, our two murderers saw the light come on. They froze. They turned off their car, turned off the headlights, and they just waited. They almost turned around. In fact, there are a lot of situations here that played out that could have resulted in this murder not happening. We're going to cover those here in future podcasts. I'm just laying out the fun of this trip, of going there, being at the scene, and it is an amazing, amazing story. So, more on that and on podcasts to come. And definitely, if you are a lawyer, check out this CLE true crime series that I am doing with NBI. They will be up on their site soon. We're still working on the marketing, but it is going to be a lot of fun and a great way to CLE. Hey, I am now done for today. I made it through solo. Thank you so much for staying with me. If you indeed you did stay to the end, have a great week, and hopefully Chris will be back from his party with Mickey and Minnie next week, and we will be back to our normal podcast. Have a great week. See you next week.
Then I actually do. Brooke Bolin for our marketing efforts, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.